Sluban County Planning Commission regular meeting on September 12, 2017 is now in session. First item of business is called to order, but we have a pledge of allegiance and a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Next item on our agenda is the director's report.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any actions to report. I just wanted to let you all know that the Board of Supervisors is pursuing filling our vacancy on the Planning Commission due to Mr. Gaines' resignation. I'll let you know as soon as they have appointed someone, and hopefully we'll have a full body again for October meeting.
Thank you. Next item is first of two public comment sections. Anyone wishing to speak on any item except for the items that are for the public hearing, you will be able to speak on those at the public hearing time. Anyone wishing to come forward, to the microphone, state your name and address. Seeing no one coming forward, we will go to the minutes of the August 8, 2017 meeting. Do I have any questions about the minutes? Corrections, or if not, do I have a motion? Mr. Guagantino has made a motion to accept the minute as written. Do I have a second?
Second.
Have a second from Mr. Johnson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 4-0. I don't reckon I should say anything about one not being no longer here.
Well, just for the record, Mr. Gaines has resigned, and so the commission is a man down in terms of membership. So the vote is 4-0 with one absent, with one vacant seat.
4-0 with one vacant. Okay. The next is our public hearings for the night. First is ZMP 1703, Columbia Rezoning, Brad Robbins.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sure Mr. Robbins is going to address this, but let me just say that it appears that there was a deficiency in the notifications that we're going to have to correct. So my recommendation is going to be that when the commission entertains this, open the matter for public hearing. If anybody from the public wants to speak, let them speak. Then I would recommend you adjourn the public hearing to your next meeting so that the deficiency in advertising can be done and make the re-advertise the things that are done properly. So you, in my opinion, can't act on the matter tonight.
Because of the fact that two other counties has to be advertised.
The notification requirements of public hearings actually get a little complicated in terms of the factual situation. What hung it up in this case was that since the property being zoned is within a half a mile of the county line, the statute requires notification of the county governments of the abutting counties. In this case, there are two counties because Gooseland is to the east, Cumberland is to the southeast. So we'd have to notify both of them. And that wasn't discovered until too late to correct the deficiency.
To notify the county statute, so.
You notify the statute, I think, says notify the county administrator. Mm-hmm. And since we didn't do that, the only way to correct that would be to have the county waive it. And I think we'd have to have the Board of Supervisors do that. Therefore, the supervisors do that. Of course, we don't have time for that either. So I'm, as you know, I'm a stickler for notifications. If the there's any possibility the notification wasn't sufficient, go ahead and redo it rather than risk having a deficiency and not having an offer adoption.
Thank you, Mr. Roberts.
Thank you, Mr. Payne. He addressed what I was going to cover a little later on. Anyway, I'll just give a brief presentation for our zoning map amendment CMP 1703, which is Columbia. So, you know, this is something that's been in progress for a while, and this is an ordinance to amend the zoning map to establish county zoning on all of the properties that were formerly within the town of Columbia. So right now, those parcels are considered to be unzoned, and this amendment would put county zoning on all of those properties. This is in the Columbia Election District as well as the Columbia Community Planning Area. So this is the map that you included with your motion when you initiated this map amendment back in July. This was one of the two options that were presented. So basically, as you'll see, this is just to get your bearings here. This is Route 6 that travels through here. And this is the residential area up on the hill, which is proposed to be zone R4. Then the properties that immediately above Route 6 are proposed to be zone BC, business convenience. And then all properties south of Route 6 that are in the floodplain are proposed to be zone A1, agricultural. Due to their location within the floodplain, and it being pretty limited as what you can do on those properties. And then, so all of the properties south of Route 6 to be zone A1, with the exception of an existing business here, an industrial business, which had requested to be zoned I2 if at all possible. So this is what's currently proposed. So the summary on the screen just covers what I just stated. Properties south of Route 6, due to the location in the floodplain, to be A1, agricultural. South of Route 6, where there's an existing business, to be zoned I2. Directly along the north side of Route 6 to be BC, and then north of that, up on the hill where the residential area is, to be zoned R4. So as part of reviewing this request, the Planning Commission should consider how it does or does not align with the goals or objectives of the comprehensive plan. So that concludes my presentation. We have a sample motion on the screen, but as Mr. Payne mentioned earlier, a deficiency with the advertisement will need to be corrected, so we'll be able to take action tonight. But that concludes my presentation. I can try to answer the questions you might have.
I think we have worked on this for many months, and we could actually sit that down and bring this back to us. I think we're really going to have the other discussion. I think we should wait until the next meeting to actually do it, the voting.
My suggestion would be to go ahead, in case there's anybody here who wants to speak, go ahead and open the
meeting. Yeah, I'm going to do that.
I did have one question and one comment. One question, does that zoning map create any, I guess, non-conformances? I know there's not a factory in one of the residential blocks, but is there any situation there that we know of that anything is going to be instantly non-conforming?
Yes.
Besides some of the setbacks, there is.
Yes, because there's the original plan of Columbia didn't contemplate modern zoning, of course. And the properties have been, in some cases, redivided from what they were originally. And a number of them are going to be below the minimum requirements for the R4 particular. They would be lawfully non-conforming. Some of them might be conforming. But put it this way, R4 is the closest we can come to making it on a residential conforming.
I guess my question, that's a good answer, but my question was sort of on macro level. Do we have any business in now what's residential? Do we have any?
Not to my knowledge.
Is there any problem ones? Because those are kind of big macro problems. Good.
their civic uses in the residential areas, such as post office and churches, and usually things like that will require special use permit. Yeah, they're allowed.
So if there was any expansion proposed, they would have to have the current standards of the rules apply.
And then the comment I wanted to add was, I've been attending and taking part with Steve Nichols' Columbia Task Force, and this was well received by that group. This certainly was pretty well received by that group. That I can recall any dissension, so I think it's Brad, you've been at those too.
That's correct. There hasn't been any feedback, negative feedback or concerns.
And the folks do understand that we're going to wait a month, but I know that group is really ready and excited to get moving on some improvements in the community, and we look forward to this. But I understand we've got to set it aside for at least a month.
Yeah.
We can move forward quickly.
Thank you. This time I'm going to open the public hearing on this matter. Anyone that wishes to come forward and speak on this matter, please come to the microphone, state your name and address, and you will be allowed 3 minutes.
Okay, my name is Carol Morse. I reside in Kensitore, Virginia. I'm here tonight representing St. Joseph's Church in Columbia. As most of you know, the town of Columbia gave to the Diocese of Richmond the property known as the Columbia Town Hall. We have since demolished that building and have converted that lot to a parking area for our Sunday services. It was previously zoned as business, and on the information that I received in the mail, or the church received in the mail, it has still remained as business, and I'm wondering if that is the correct zoning for that particular lot. It's one block off of Route 6, off of Cameron Street. It may be highlighted in white on your slide there.
Which one? This one?
Let me see if I got it. I think it's right there. I'm shaking like a leaf, but that's all right. The church is on the corner, and of course, the town hall was on the south side of the church. So the question is, should it be business, like the information that I received in the mail indicates?
That seems to indicate it's residential. That seems, where you pointed, seems to be residential.
Yes, I agree with you. And that's why I wonder, why is it zoned business as far as the proposal goes, or the rezoning goes?
I don't think it is. I think it's,
yes, I have the information right here. In fact, it was in the public Levana Review where they outlined what was residential and what was business.
Where exactly is the property, Mr. Morris?
It's adjacent to the church in the town of Columbia, one block off of Route 6.
Well, this map shows, I don't remember which cross street is which, but
let me point with my finger.
Please.
Okay, this is 659 right here. I believe the church is on this corner, and the town hall was right adjacent to that. And they zoned the lot as business. And it was previously.
This proposal is recommended for residential.
The public notice in the Levana Review said business.
Mr. Robbins, can you speak to that?
What parcel is that? What parcel number?
You know
is
the parcel number?
Yes. Okay, just I don't know who should see this, but there it is right there. And the parcel number is number 61B. 54? What? Read the number.
54A161B.
Right.
That is in fact business on the advertisement.
Sorry?
That is in fact business.
That shows business convenience.
Given as the advertisement.
Okay.
Okay.
I don't know what would be to the best advantage for the church.
Sooner or later, someday, 100 years from now, we may want to put some classrooms on that lot. I don't know what would be to the best advantage to be able to do that.
So if this were, assuming this were to pass like it is, I would assume that the wording, where the parcel is placed in the wording of the ordinance for the trunk.
Correct.
That's correct. So right now, it would be business.
Business convenience.
We'll have to take a look at that and make sure that the parcel number matches appropriately with what's being advertised and what's being proposed.
Since we're basically continuing that to our next meeting, if that change needs to be made, we can make that between now and then.
Correct.
For your information, Mr. Chairman, religious assembly is a use permitted in the ordinance and it's permitted by special use permit in both R4 and BC. So it would be treated the same way. As long as the church is using it as for a church facility,
it would be treated
the same way under the zoning ordinance under either district.
Correct.
Not that, I'm not saying we shouldn't get this straight because we definitely need to, but I don't know whether that's helpful, Mr. Martin.
I didn't quite understand what you were saying there. Would you repeat that?
If it's zoned R4 or BC, residential or commercial, churches are permitted by special use permit exactly the same way in both of those districts.
Okay, so if we wanted at some future point in time to put classrooms that would be used on Sundays,
you probably need a special use permit, but you need it either way.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for pointing out this confusion.
Thank you very much. Y'all want to look into that before I get straight. Anyone else wanting to come forward while the public hearing is open for this item? Please come forward, state your name and address. You will be allowed 3 minutes.
Hi, my name is Brenda Beasley, and I live on Dogwood Drive in the Columbia District. And my sister and I, and my husband, we own these. There's 8 lots, 2 blocks with 4 lots each. Part of it, you can see that Route 659 cuts through, and part of it's in a floodplain. And then also there's this obsolete road running through them that divides them. I think they're half acres apiece, and I've been trying for years to get answers on these things. And on May 3rd, I met with members of the planning department, and was trying to get some clarification on what these lots, what can be done with them. And I think they were zoned as R1 or A1. I don't know if it was just an A1, but it wasn't R4. Anyway, I was told that whatever it was at that time, that they would prepare me a document that grandfathered it in. That's the zone that it was prior. And I told them I had a few other questions. And so I submitted a memo on June 16th, and I had 6 different questions. And my response that I received told me to get a lawyer to get those questions answered. And that was rather shocking to me. But so I was hoping, I called yesterday to the planning department trying to get some clarification how R4 designation affects those little half acre lots. What, and I still don't know. I wasn't given a straight answer as to how the R4 zoning affects half acre lots. And of course, half of it's in a floodplain. I guess I'm not going to get an answer here either. But anyway, that's my concern.
Seeing no one else coming forward, we will continue this public hearing.
You really ought to have a motion to adjourn the public hearing to the next meeting.
Okay. I could get a motion to adjourn the public hearing to the next meeting, the October meeting. Okay. Mr. Zimmer makes a motion to adjourn the public hearing to the next meeting. Do I have a second? I have a second from Mr. Johnson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 4-0, one vacancy.
Excuse me.
The next item on the agenda is SUP 1703.
Thank you. Good evening, members of the commission. This is a request to amend condition of special use permit 1308 with respect to 26 acres of tax map 21-12-5. Applicant wishes to amend condition 9, previous special use permit 1308, to increase the maximum amount of dogs permitted on site from 20 to 40. This parcel and all surrounding properties are zoned A1 agricultural. This original special use permit was for a commercial kennel, had 9 conditions. This was approved by the Board of Supervisors unanimously on December 18th, 2013. And condition 9 states no more than 20 dogs on the premises at any given time. They wish to increase that number to 40. It's the location of the property within the county. It's the property itself. It's on Valley Farm Lane off of Holmes Road. As you can see, this property and all the surrounding ones are zoned A1 agricultural. There's a neighborhood meeting on August 9th, 2017. There are 3 attendees. Major concerns are about traffic and road maintenance, and how that would impact, how the increase in the number of dogs from 20 to 40 would increase traffic to the site. And there's one neighbor who objected to the special use permit on the grounds of increased traffic and road wear. So VDOT did a site visit. They went on the week of August 7th. They said they had no concerns about road capacity or road condition. They had no comments during the technical review committee and said they did not object to this proposal. Overall, they wish to amend condition 9 of that previous special use permit to allow for 40 dogs up from 20. This is due to an increased demand for kennel services within the county. No new structures are proposed. They have a 3-car garage where all the animals would be staying in. They also have 1 acre of open space. It's fenced with gates for the dogs to run around. 40 dogs is not planned to be the daily total. It's more to increase their capacity to serve on the holidays. This is a view of the front of the structure that was taken on August 21st. The 3-car garage where the animals stay is in the back. You can't really see it here from the front. And this was the condition of the road. It had recently been repaved and re-graveled. VDOT didn't have any concerns with it, and staff is it. We were fine with it. In conclusion, this amends the previous condition. 20 to 40 dogs appears to meet all the requirements for zoning ordinance. And I have a motion of the applicant who's here tonight.
Okay.
What's your response to the neighbors so far on this request?
There was one neighbor who was against it, and the other two were neutral.
How close to the road is the nearest neighbor's house, would you say, roughly? I'm thinking in terms of dust and things like that.
Let's see from the aerial photography. This is the property in question. There's a home down here. There's the structure here. The road itself branches off right here. Comes around.
There won't be any vehicular traffic. Is that
if there is vehicular traffic, we increase maybe one, potentially two extra rides a day, but that's best with the applicant.
They pick up most of these.
They go on a circuit, they pick up the animals, and they take them to the site.
She has a very, very large size van.
Yes.
Her van can accommodate most.
The people in general are dropping them off this side.
Not according to the applicants, mainly her.
Is this a county road or private road?
This is a private road.
Just been recently regrouped.
From what we could see on August 21st,
what was the neighbors of that objection?
They were worried about the potential wear and tear that more vehicular trips along the road could generate, as well as noise.
Not noise from the dogs barking and so on.
But just from the vehicles, potentially from the dogs, I guess depending on how many would be on the site at once. Major concerns seem to just be about the road and road condition.
Zero Jr., Collins Road, Elmira. Basically, I am not in support of this amendment to the special use permit. I can't read and see at the same time. It's one of those things. I'm not in support of this. And at the neighborhood meeting, I had many questions and brought up many items that weren't addressed in that summary. At any rate, I've spent my entire professional career in animal welfare and public safety, semi-retired now. I'm hoping that my knowledge and experience that will help you in your decision here on whether you should forward your recommendation to the board or not. I hope it will, because I've been in this profession a long time. I think increasing the dogs from 20 to 40 would be detrimental. I think it'd be detrimental to the rural character of Luvanna County, which is changing dramatically. I think it would be detrimental to the welfare of the dogs that are housed in the existing building, and I think it'd be detrimental to public safety, notwithstanding the VDOT statement there. So with respect to the rural character of Luvanna, which is important to me, I'm sure it's important to all of you as well. There is already an increase in commercial traffic and noise since the original issue of the permit. And this is a rural residential environment. You know, I think folks have an expectation of non-commercial noise and traffic in a rural zoned area. I think you have a certain expectation of that. Now, my property abuts the entire length of Bybee Farms Road. It goes about a half a mile. In some cases, that road is 20 feet from my property line, that private road. It concerns me greatly. With respect to the welfare of the animals that are kenneled at the existing facility, it's my understanding from looking at the permits that what we're looking at for a kennel facility is a 36 by 24 building, garage. I believe that that's accurate, which I believe it is. That's a garage, not a kennel. That's not a commercial kennel. All right, that's 864 square feet, or roughly 21 square feet per dog. And that's that would be 21 square feet each dog, 40 dogs would have, if you didn't have anything else in that room. You didn't have equipment, you didn't have crates, you didn't have whatever it took to support those animals. So that's your basic. And that's not much at all. If you look around the country on what is happening now with kennel facility design. So that really concerns me. And what that does, that for me, you know, I look at overcrowding, I look at safe ventilation, I look at sanitation, staff ratio for all these dogs. You're going from 20 to 40. 20 is one thing, you know, I understand that. But going to 40 now, you know, you're in a group housing environment. This is not a kennel with physical barriers where you have dogs individually. You have them just out there. It's my understanding. That creates all kinds of issues. So what you end up with a group housing issue, if you have too many dogs in an environment, you end up with all kinds of social issues. You can end up with aggression. You end up with dogs having all kinds of behavior problems. And most of the dogs that end up in shelters today are there because of behavior issues. So this is not enough square footage to go up to 40 dogs. And I know that it said a moment ago that it wouldn't be 40 dogs all the time. How is that policed? I don't understand that. How do you know when there's 40 dogs? Who's to say it's not always going to be all the time? So I think when I look at something like this or a kennel design, I would look at the maximum amount of dogs and plan on that all the time, because you don't know if it's going to be more or less for sure. You're only taking someone's word for it. I'm uncomfortable with that. So, and also in a group housing, you've got a building, certain square footage, 864 square footage. You know, ventilation is very important. You know, air cleaners to change the air in those rooms. That's all part of kennel design today. And this isn't we don't talk about just daycare. We're talking about a kennel, commercial kennel. Daycare is one thing. So safe ventilation, overcrowding, the social issues, the behavior issues that could happen. Those are all concerns that should be addressed. Sanitation, you're doubling the amount of waste. Where's all that waste going? Now it's doubled. You know, staff ratio, you're going from 20 dogs.
You need to wrap it up.
You're going from 20 dogs to 40 dogs. So staff ratio would increase. So group housing, you cannot move. Safe animal transportation, how are you transporting all these animals? You know, I mean, the vehicles they're using, to my understanding, are minivans. There's only maybe 160 square foot in a minivan if you took all the seats out. That's only two or three dogs, maybe. Depends on the size of the dog. Safely, and they should be in crates. They're probably not. If I were the animal control officer at that time, you know, I might probably would cite them for not having, for overcrowding in the vehicle. The vehicles, they're not safe. Anyway, public safety, very quickly. I am concerned about emergency preparedness. The road itself is only single, it's a gravel road. It's unclear if the entrance to that facility, I'm not sure, is at least 30 foot wide to allow emergency vehicles in. When I was in fire service, our vehicles were 30 to 40 feet long. They needed space. So that would be three minutes in a nutshell.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much. I'm sorry?
Oh, my glass.
Can't see without them.
Mr. Newman, in reading this originally, isn't the dogs most of the time outside in the fenced-in areas and basically inside for the feeding?
That's my understanding, but Ms. Marks can speak to that.
Okay. I will let her come forward and speak to that. I should have did that first, but I kind of slipped past it.
Hi, I'm Mary Marks, and I live at 232 Bybee Farms Lane. And I run Canine Concierge, as well as Mudfruit Farm, which is, as you saw from the picture, you see my barn first, then there's my house, and you can't even see my kennel. And to address, if I can address all his issues, I do have two minivans. I've taken the seats out, and I can get dogs in it. I do have them loose, but they're people's pets, dogs. They just go in the car, they lay down, they go to sleep, they have their friends, because we have the same group. Every Monday I get so many dogs, and on Tuesday I get the other dogs, whatever. They all know each other. I don't have aggressive dogs because everything's open. during the day, the kennel door, which is, I built a garage because it's for on the beautiful days I can have those three doors open and it's beautiful. So there's plenty of ventilation. I have three air conditioners going and three fans, so there's plenty of ventilation. They are loose unless the owner asks me to kennel them at night. Depending on the owner, I do as they ask. They're tired by the end of the day. They have an acre to run in and out of. And one of the doors is open as long as myself or Susan or Hannah are there. I have two people. I have someone who helps me 7 days a week, and I have someone who comes on Tuesday or Fridays and Saturdays. So they come, and we're there, and somebody's in the dog room from basically 8:30 to 4:30 in the afternoon. But because we pick up and drop off, like today we left at 3:30 so I could get everybody home to get to this meeting. So it sort of just depends. If it's rainy and gross, we go home a little bit earlier. As far as the fire, I have one of my clients runs the Zion's Crossroad fire thing. He's looked at it. He's fine with it. He doesn't have any problems with it. I have ADT running fire smoke detectors in my house that go directly to the fire department. So if anything goes wrong, they're there. They don't call me first. I have a whole house generator just for the dogs, so if it's 100 degrees and the power goes out while I'm off dropping dogs off, the air conditioners and the fans are still going. So, and I pick up 90% of the dogs. Some get dropped off, it just depends on the client, but very few get dropped off. But from my house, or from my driveway, Mr. Ponzio's house is 750 feet from my driveway where it hits Bybee's Farms Lane. Amy and Paul, who are the people, so you drive down the road, they're my next neighbors, from the building to their house is 340 feet away, and then my other neighbor from the building to his house is 330 feet away from last time's permit. We had to figure that all out. And the acre, I do have waste, but I also have manure from the cows, the horses, and the pigs. So it gets all put in there, and it gets you, people use it, people come and take it from me to use it on their gardens. So it's just part of what they get. And my dogs are quiet. Sometimes they bark because the dogs or the horses go by, or the dogs go by, but I really work hard to keep everybody quiet. I am expanding because Sadie's Stay and Play has closed, and it won't be 40 dogs every day. It's, you know, say 10 are sleeping over and I have 10 on the slate to be picked up for daycare, and someone says, hey, can you get Zoe today? Well, no, I can't, but this would allow me to say, yeah, I can get Zoe and I can get Fred too, because then I would be 22 dogs and go from there. I also have had recently, with all the storms, I had a client go away and he got stuck into that hurricane in Houston, and he ended up being gone for another week and a half, so I had his dog. So I had to like cancel some daycare dogs and whatnot. So I'm just trying to expand and make it reasonable for everybody else. And Mr. Ponzio is a professional, but so am I, and I do it differently, and it's just a difference of opinion. There's no right or wrong answer. The dogs are happy, they're playing. My clients all know that I pick them up in the minivans and I bring them home. Nobody has a problem. If they do, they're not a client.
Is this, this garage is 36 by 22?
I believe so. I can't remember. Ed Pede made
it. That's what all that.
Yeah, then that's what it is.
So that would be 722 square feet, which would be actually 18.05 square feet per dog.
Right, but they all sleep on the couch together.
Yeah.
But like there's six or seven on a couch at a time. You know, like today I was sitting on one of the couches and I had two on me, one behind me, two at my feet. They are all just dogs. They want, you know, they like hanging out with each other. They don't, and there are a few that want to be separated, so they go, you know, whatever. We work towards everybody to make everybody happy.
And then they're separated when they're fed.
Yes,
they're
everybody
fed,
gets separated because some have allergies. So I have, I think, 12 kennels set up at all times, and everyone goes into each one to be fed. And if I have more dogs, the fast eating ones go in first, then the medium eating dogs, that's so on and so forth. But they all like it because they're getting fed. But that way, if someone eats faster, or you know, this one has this allergy or that one has that allergy, it makes it easier for everybody involved.
Does anybody else have any questions for the applicant? Yeah, I'm gonna go back to that.
think you said, but I may have missed it. So the fact that you transport the dogs open in a van and that they run in the grass and you're outside, that's all known to your clients, right?
Yes. Yes. I have a website as well as a Facebook, and, you know, that's how they, you know, and then a lot of people come out and see my facility. A lot of people come for tours, and they'll drive out that day, but then they never come back again because they just know what's going on and they're happy to do it. And then some people never come out. It just depends on the client.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Public hearing is still in session. Anyone else wanting to come forward and speak on this item, please come forward, state your name and address.
My name is Patricia Eager, and I live at 1107 Beechunk Drive. And I had a time when I was going away, it was Christmas, and fortunately Mary could take my dog. It's a little Pekingese, and she had a great time. And it's true that they can play together, they can hop up on the sofa, and it's very much like their home, and they're not always in the kennel. I think I would have been really in trouble if she hadn't. And I think I'd also like to remind the Planning Commission that a few years ago the board passed for a kennel across the street, and I think it was 60. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. It never materialized because it didn't come, but I just wanted to remind you of that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Seeker's referring to property across the street that's in much more, it's in a growth area.
Gentleman came. Okay. Anyone else want to come forward, speak? Come forward to the microphone, state your name and address. Seeing no one coming forward, I will end the public hearing at this time. Anyone want to discuss this? If not, do I have a motion?
I will make the motion. I move that the Planning Commission recommends approval of SUP 1703, request to amend Condition 9, Special Use Permit 1308 to allow for no more than 40 dogs on the premises at any given time in a commercial kennel with respect to 26.602 acres on Tax Map 21, Section 12.
I have a motion by Mr. Zimmer for approval of SUP 1703. Do I have a second?
Second.
Have a second by Mr. Johnson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. 4-0 and 1 vacancy. Thank you. The next item is unfinished business. We had at our last meeting, CMP 702 Village Oaks proffer amendment, and the applicant asked for a deferral, and it was deferred to tonight.
All right, good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission. I'll give a brief update. So, as you stated, you held your public hearing on this application on August the 8th, after which you voted 5-0 to defer this request to your next meeting. The application, if you remember from the August meeting, it was proposing to remove proffer number 8 in its entirety. Since the August Planning Commission meeting, the applicant has revised the application to amend proffer 8. Instead of remove it. And just a map to show where the development in question is located. It's along Lake Monticello Road, across from the main entrance into Lake Monticello. So the hatched red area there is Buddhist Village Oaks. So this is existing proffer 8 as it currently reads. I won't read the entire proffer that's on the screen, but I'll just highlight that one of the main things about the current wording is the restriction that the housing is only intended and designed for a person's age 55 and older, and that at least 80% of the units must be occupied at least one person who's 55 or older. So the application was revised to read, amend Prop 8 to read, a minimum of 35% of the housing shall be designed with at least one bedroom on the first floor, such that all typical living functions can be accommodated on the first floor of the home. So to conclude, the proposed proffer amendment removes the age restriction of 55 or older, but it still ensures that a certain percentage of the units are designed for main floor living, which would encourage seniors. Village Oaks would still contain the approved assisted living facility that was approved through special permit 0420. And as part of this request, the Planning Commission should consider how it does or does not align with the goals and objectives of the comprehensive plan. So that concludes my presentation. There's a sample motion on the screen for your use. I can try to answer any questions you might have. The applicant is present this evening as well.
Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Robinson? Does anybody want to have the applicant come forward? Maybe I got a couple questions for the applicant. Could the applicant come forward?
Good evening.
How you doing?
Charlie Armstrong with Southern Development. Again, it's good to see you again. Keith Lancaster is in full recovery. He's been able to join us this time. If you'd like a short presentation, I can give you one, or I can just answer questions.
I would have a little bit of questioning because it doesn't seem that the reading you proffer is exactly what we discussed at our last meeting. Is the only accommodation for age 55 and over is having a bedroom on the bottom floor?
That's what's proffered. We also intend to build things like wider doorways. The reason we didn't include those standards in the actual proffer itself is it leads to a lot of kind of internal inspection of the house that could be problematic. I think with a building permit, you can pretty easily figure out where the bedrooms are and everything. And not everybody wants all of the features of universal design, which is one of the things I mentioned last time. Having no steps and bedroom on the front door, you know, you enable everybody to use that first floor as the primary or only living space, and that's the main.
No, in the original application, it was presented to the fact that it was to help for the fact of age in place, the assisted living facility and all of that combined basically to so that a person could stay in this community and not leave the community. I think this changing concept that was presented originally to the board, that's the main concern I've had for the whole thing. We've worked on this thing and amended it for y'all and so forth like that to match HUD regulations and so forth like that. So I think this is about the fourth or fifth time this has come before the planning.
You're right, it is a change. There's no argument from us about that, without a doubt. And those visits to try to tweak it around the edges to make this work are the reason for the change.
Is it the fact that you think that 55 is not what 55 was back when this originally was?
45 is the new 55?
Or 55.
75 is the new 85. Either way.
So, you know, I do know that they're building a new assisted living thing over in Charles, so I saw it advertised the other day. So.
All right, that's right. I hadn't thought of it that way, but yes, there is more of a continuum. One of the things we heard from the one member of the public who spoke last time was that those who live in the other active adult community that's currently under construction in Fluvanna, some of them really wish there was a diversity of age groups for a lot of reasons. I pass around one thing that I told you I'd get. I passed out some copies of emails at the last meeting.
I think this original proposal was like 13 years ago.
2004 is when we started, right? Maybe even started in 2003. And in the last meeting, I gave you a couple of emails from, there are three current residents of Village Oaks, and those emails were supporting this. This is a letter from the third one, the Muskies. They're in support of the application also. And I forgot and failed to mention to you last time that those three owners, because we're proposing to rezone their property, we had to go to them first. They actually signed the application to petition for this amendment to the zoning. So it is unanimous in the desire among those who live there right now.
Mr. Payne.
Sure.
The original homeowners association papers to this, does this have any legal complications because of what they originally was in their original homeowners association stuff?
I don't remember those well enough to comment, but homeowners documents are in the nature of a contract between the developer and the homeowners and among the homeowners. The county's not a party.
Okay.
In this case, this is a zoning restriction to which the homeowners are not parties. This is imposed by the county. It's volunteered, but once the proffer is accepted, it becomes the law of the case with respect to these things. So, in other words, if the county were to change the zoning by way of accepting an amended proffer, it's inconsistent with the homeowners' documents. The homeowners would still have whatever rights they have to enforce the homeowners' documents.
So as the person who wrote this letter, the walking trails are going to be, the clubhouse is going to be, the pool is going to be, sidewalks are going to be.
Those things are part of the plan.
That's right.
So the county would enforce those things.
There's a master plan that goes along with these proffers. So we're not proposing any changes to that.
Yeah, that's enforceable by the zoning administrator.
And I remember, this was long enough ago that I remember Mr. Chester was the board supervisor's representative here on this group. And he was highly in favor of this because of the assisted living facility. That was a key component of this. This changes none of that.
That's correct.
Although you don't have any plans to immediately start building. That's still on the master plan, and that space on the master plan this doesn't allow that to be used for anything else.
Right. This changes nothing regardless.
Would you agree with that, Mr.
Sure. Correct. I actually filled out the application for Southern Development. That parcel was excluded from this application and is not a part of this application process. And if I might add,
Monzella Village or something as well.
There was a name at one point. But if I may add, about just speaking in general terms about housing and multi-generational neighborhoods, and really it's a trend in housing is what you're seeing. I, in fact, live in a neighborhood like that that has an assisted living facility, multiple housing types that vary. And just recently I built single living with two bedrooms upstairs for my kids and get yelled at because he said we live in the retirement side of the community. From my 10-year-old son. So while his friends live over, two streets over. But anyways, it's a trend in housing we're seeing, and I think that's what we think is going to be vibrant enough to bring this community together. allowing clubhouse pools and other facilities within the community that are very important, which we have in our community, which keeps, as aging couples, more active, interacting with my kids in the street, babysitting my kids because they come home early from school. My wife and I both work. So these are the trends in housing we're seeing. And having, as we build out Nambour, and we probably have 6 years to build that out, more than likely, depending on the market, we feel that this is probably the right place for this type of community.
Okay, like, have any more questions for the applicant?
Thank you.
We've had the public hearing last week, so we don't have to open that back up. Do I have a...
For the record, I don't think there's anybody here.
Yeah, well, I'm...
Public anywhere. I didn't count this season.
Do I have a motion about this?
Yes, I'll make the motion again. I move that the Planning Commission recommend approval of ZMP 1702, a request to amend proffer number 8, ZMP 1402, with respect to tax map. Parcels 13 and 14, see in tax map 9, section 13, parcels A, B, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7.
Okay, do I have a second? I have a second from Mr. Martinsino. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Passes 4-0. Okay. Thank y'all. The next item is some new business, accessory homestay. Ms. Robinson will be the presenter on that.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to add that Board Supervisors asked planning staff some time back to look into how we regulate Airbnbs. Accessory homestays with planning folks around the state are calling these. So just to clarify that. And this is what we presented to the board last month, and what we're going to be bringing something back to you all to consider.
Okay. Airbnb is a proprietary term.
Yeah.
Yeah, so as it's been stated, this is just an informational presentation. You're being given the same information that's already been given to the Board of Supervisors. This is just information. One of the more official terms out there is called short-term rentals, which is when people rent out their home, apartment, or condo. Other terms that float out there, that's vacation rentals. It generally is for a period of 30 days or less. Currently, in Fluvanna County, we don't have any regulations in the zoning ordinance to cover this activity. So right now, basically, any kind of lodging activity is confined to the three uses, being bed and breakfast, boarding house, and hotel. So those definitions from our zoning ordinance on the screen. Bed and breakfast talks about primarily engaged in overnight temporary lodging, may provide meals for compensation. Boarding house talks about where compensation lodging and meals for between 5 and 14 persons. And then a hotel, very broad definition there. Rental lease to transients by the day, week, or month. Can include additional services such as daily maid services, restaurants, meeting rooms, recreation facilities. So those are some of the differences between our existing definitions. Online, there's a lot of websites out there for a new trend for renting out your home. Airbnb, which is probably one of the most more common, but some others that you see on the screen, Craigslist, Flipkey, HomeAway, Vacation Rentals, others, I think this would be RBO's tax board. Anyway, there's tons of websites out there. These are just a few selected, some of the most popular that came up. But of course, Airbnb is one of the more popular ones. In 2016, the General Assembly passed legislation that would have prevented local governments from regulating this activity at all. After that was done, the governor asked the Housing Commission to take another look at this. So in 2017, the General Assembly passed legislation that was different from what they passed in 2016 that allows local governments to create a registry of this activity to find residents who operate without being registered, and it doesn't restrict us from regulating this activity as it did at first. So why should we look at even regulating this? Basically, it allows people to become legal, creates a legal path. It helps protect the character of residential neighborhoods, keeps some of the commercial activity under control, and it helps protect the public health and safety. So we took a look at just within our immediate area as what other counties or localities may be doing in regards to this. Albemarle has a definition in their ordinance for tourist lodging within a single family dwelling. Not exactly sure how what's enforced with that, but anyway, that's the definition we did come across in their ordinance. Louisa County currently doesn't have any regulations. Goochland County treats this activity as a home occupation. And Charlottesville is similar. They actually define a homestay as a home occupation. So one locality that has kind of taken the lead in adopting some regulations, one locality we would be looking to maybe follow their precedent. Arlington County adopted regulations back in December to define this activity as accessory homestay with multiple standards and ordinance. So accessory homestay in their ordinance is defined as a home occupation. So they're similar that they treat it as a home occupation, in which an owner of a dwelling unit occupies the dwelling as their primary residence, rented to a lodger, either such dwelling unit or portion thereof. They don't allow any detached accessory buildings on the property to be connected to the home occupation, so it's just confined to the single family dwelling. And they do not authorize any other activity, such as parties, banquets, weddings, renting out the home for those type of activities. They limit it to just lodging. This is our current definition of home occupation in the Fluvanna County Zoning Ordinance. An occupation carried on by the occupant of a dwelling as a secondary use, which there's no display, no one's employed, other than members of the family residing on the premises, no increase in traffic, no more than 25% of the gross floor area shall be used for such an occupation. So if we were to go a similar route as Arlington and Goochland or some of the other counties, we would just need to take a look at amending this definition, maybe to incorporate accessory homestay. So that concludes the staff's presentation. As it's been mentioned, the board has already directed staff to maybe look at moving forward with an amendment to address this activity, but we would welcome any questions, comments you might have at this time.
I say that would be some type of registry, and would that registry be listed at the county?
It wouldn't necessarily have to be a registry depending on how we worded it.
Would there have to be some type of permit for this? And how would, like, health department or anything like that be involved in something like this?
I think that's the kind of question you would need me to develop. It
looks like a golden door for a lot of creep. You know, first you get to, if you're going to serve food, I think it seems to be that you want to ensure that it's been inspected, that it is, you know, that it is handling the sanitary condition and this, that, and the other. Of course, if you travel through, if it's not what you expect, you don't go back.
Some localities, like the city of Roanoke, I know for sure requires the homestays to submit to annual inspections by the property maintenance officials. I mean, Fluvin County doesn't have property maintenance staff.
It looks like to me, you know, it can just creep on from one thing right to another.
In other words, basically, this is for a family to come in and use somebody else's space. The family there would not be there also, right?
That's the way it's supposed to work.
It could be both ways.
One of Airbnb's original concepts was I go on vacation and leave my house empty and rent it to you while I'm on my vacation.
Yeah, well, that's where I was going with that. In other words, it's their residence, but they're not going to be there while the other person is.
How much ordinance requires?
How much ordinance requires the.
That the manager of the property actually was on.
And be there while they're there also.
That's Mr. Lockham Sr. is really describing a typical classic B&B. The Airbnb, that's really the difference, is the owner occupies the house, but he may not be there while the tenant is there.
Like I say, this seems like to be open the door for you come along like smoke detectors, okay? Who's going to show that they've got to have the smoke detectors that they're working? First thing you know, we're going to have to hire a person to make sure we've got, once you reach 4 or 5 or something, that all these things are complied with. It looks like to me that, I don't know how you keep it from just mushroom, you know. If you have somebody over here, that the whole family gets diarrhea and goes to the emergency room. Well, it was a food problem. So then we got to get into that. It looks like to me it's don't get me wrong. I don't think it shouldn't be regulated if you have that many. But it's certainly something to think. But where do you stop?
I think the answer to that question is really this is an introductory presentation, and I don't think the staff has thought through those questions. And a lot of those questions, the answer to the questions you're raising are whatever the board says.
Yeah.
So it may be that as Mr. Lockham Sr. has suggested that Admiral does, you already permit B&Bs, maybe you want to leave it at that.
Right now, we have Airbnbs operating in the county, but they're not legal under the zoning ordinance. So more than likely consider them to be hotels that are operating.
You know, the problem with this is a lot of this is really a new concept. It hadn't been done commercially until pretty recently. So a lot of the law is really not very well developed. But if I were to say, I'm going away for the week and Mr. Bibbs' satellite dish isn't working and he wants to watch the NAS series with the Dodgers. Barry, why don't you come over and stay in our house while we're gone? Now, I'm not charging any rent or anything, so that's, I'm hypothesizing this intentionally as being all the way at one end. That's in the nature of my personal guest coming and staying in my house as my personal guest. The next thing would be Mr. Bibbs says, no, I can't do that without paying you, okay, pay me $20 a day, we'll call it even. That's the next step through being commercial. And then the question is, in my first case, I'd be glad to defend that case if somebody said I was violating the zoning rules. Because it's a personal friend, personal guest. As it gets more nearly commercial, it'd be harder for me to defend that without being permitted in the ordinance. If I have some familiarity with B&Bs because my next door neighbor operates B&B. And it is her residence. She lives there full time. She rents out, occasionally she rents out 2 bedrooms, usually one. And she may go weeks without having a rental. Then she may, you know, big weekend or something like that, she may have a couple.
I think it's a lot of stuff to look at.
Yes,
I think that's where we're talking
about. Whether we're going to have lodging tax, if they have to be registered, if they have to get a special permit, or what. So.
Yeah, I think this is really introductory for you.
There's a localities are addressing them in a wide variety of ways for treating them as home occupations with very limited definitions of what constitutes a home away stay. Whereas the city of Roanoke is requiring applicants to get a special exception from the Board of Zoning Appeals that they have to renew every couple of years and also submit into annual inspections. So they're different intensity and different avenues and approaches. So what we hope to do is find one that works for Levine County.
We don't have any hotels to be in competition with these things in the county and all of the
world. Not that I know.
So just a B&B or two.
If I can just make a comment, I think if the owner is there and gets into the activity of serving meals to the guests and is actually there with the guests, it's probably going to kick them into another category of being an actual bed and breakfast.
That is a different level. Mm-hmm. Not really, but to traditional Airbnb is like more like renting a house at the beach and you cook your own meals.
As Mr. Payne stated.
Defending?
I feel it does. That concludes
okay.
My presentation.
Thank you. The next item on our agenda is our second of two public comment sections. Anyone wishing to come forward, state your name and address, and you'll be allowed 3 minutes.
My name is James Newman. I work with the Flavanna County Claim Department. There was a gentleman up here earlier in the evening for the St. James Catholic Church, and he said that church is going to be rezoned as business, and that he received a letter in the mail to that effect. He's very adamant about that. The church is going to be rezoned R4. The parcel on which the town hall is going to be rezoned business. It's hard to see on the map that we had, because you can't see the lines differentiating the parcels too clearly, but on the map, including the packet, and in conjunction with our online GIS system, you can see clearly that the parcel with the church is going to be R4. The parcel that had the town hall is going to be BC. So staff did not make any mistakes in sending out the letters for the mailing.
All right, so that's all, it's correct the way it is?
Yes.
The map corresponds?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I just
wanted
to have that for the record. Thank you.
Important to clear that up.
Thank you.
It's just because the floodplain overlay was making it.
Yes, that, and it is hard to see the differentiating lines between the parcels on this screen, but within the packet itself, you can clearly see where the two parcels are.
Thank you.
Can you allow the
We can.
I will share that with Father General and everybody else to make sure he understands that.
Thank you.
Okay. If there is no one else wishing to come forward to make a public comment, we will end our second public comment section for the night. And if I have no objections, we will adjourn at 8:13.
Just one more thing. Our work session next month will probably be totally devoted to the CIP, and we'll have the agencies here similar to years past.
Thank you. We now adjourn to 8:13.
Would it be inappropriate for us to
presumably
they brought up the
letter? yard.
So how would it impact?
She asked a question. I suggest you answer
the item. Good night.
Big donkey.